Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, my speech from Tucson, Arizona at the University of Arizona. No advertisers on this episode at all. There's only two things I want to ask you to do. Please consider supporting us. Please consider becoming a year-end supporter of at charliekirk.com/support. I want to thank Michael for your support from California, David from Alabama. I want to thank Kinga from Texas. I want to thank Don from Indiana. I want to thank Isaac from Iowa. I want to thank John from Pennsylvania. I want to thank Heidi from California, Tong from Arizona, Pamela from California, Ralph from Tennessee. If you guys are in a position to be able to do so, please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. We are deeply appreciative. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. I know I will be seeing many of you at December 18, 19, 2021 in Phoenix, Arizona, tpusa.com/amfest, tpusa.com/amfest. Make sure you check it out. It's going to be amazing. tpusa.com/amfest. Tucker, Kaylee McEnany, Greg Gutfeld, Ted Cruz, Jesse Waters, Rand Paul, Pete Hegseth, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, the biggest names in the movement, all coming at tpusa.com/amfest. My speech at the University of Arizona. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. So there's some good things to celebrate tonight, and I love the state of Arizona. I actually kind of want to talk a little bit about this in particular because this state is – it's so incredibly important that all of us and all of you, we start to take ownership for this state. This state could go either way. This state could go the way of Colorado or California, or can go the way of Texas and Florida. And I prefer Texas and Florida, I'll tell you what. But what we've seen is – kind of a little bit of both. And the question is, are we going to be a state that kind of embraces the same sort of ideology of the people that are fleeing that from California? Or are we going to still be in this state kind of this respecting of individual liberty and freedom, but a family-friendly state, one where you don't have to worry about school board presidents spying on parents, an open carry state? But also one that is not going to force people to get a vaccine against their will. And let me just kind of start with that. No one should be forced to get the vaccine against their will. And no one should be fired from their job for not wanting to take a vaccine. And Arizona, so I grew up in Chicago, not here. This is not my, anyone else from Chicago? It's great. We're all, we moved from Chicago. The great thing about being from, so Illinois is an interesting place. Unlike most states, has term limits, but it's different than Arizona. It's one term in office, one term in jail for our politicians. When we ask for our governor's cell number, I mean his actual cell number, right? If you're from Illinois, you know exactly what I mean. Arizona's not nearly as corrupt, thankfully. But I came here for a reason. We came here for a reason. Turning Point USA is headquartered right down the street in Phoenix. I'm not going to get in the whole Phoenix-Tucson debate. I like Phoenix. So we'll just leave it at that. But yeah, you guys can make your own choices. I love all of Arizona. How about that? I'm not going to pick sides. But I was in Chicago yesterday and I kind of got in the whole Cubs Sox thing. I got booed off the stage almost. Yeah. See, we're not going to get into that. All right. So we'll just say go Cardinals, right? They're good this year. But we don't watch football anymore. So I guess whatever. So, but we came here for a reason at Turning Point USA because Arizona was a place where you could raise a family. It was affordable to live, where your first liberties were protected, that you could enjoy, obviously, the climate and there was a nice lifestyle, but you didn't have to worry about some sort of radical regime kind of taking over the state and going in a direction that we wouldn't like. And now I think some of us here in Arizona are like, wait a second, there's something way out of whack here. From the way that we administer our elections to what is being debated or trying to be implemented in this state to try and continue to try to curtail a lot of our freedoms and liberties. And so that's one of the big things that I want to first zero in on is the future of Arizona is really up in the air. As Arizona goes, the country's going to go. Is that if Arizona decides to go a very radical left-wing collectivist and kind of authoritarian direction, the country's also going to head that way. Arizona is the state that could very well determine the future of the entire republic. And before I go any further, I do want to make sure I thank our amazing Turning Point USA leaders and chapter members here. You guys do an amazing job, and you guys deserve applause. You really do for the great work you do. Also, our Turning Point Faith chapter at Calvary Chapel, Oro Valley, do a great job. And it's just been such a, it's been such a great tour. I got to tell you, going from University of Oregon, which was really wild, Boise State, we did University of Vermont, Michigan, Minnesota, Clemson, Alabama, Baylor. We've been all over the place, but we wanted to make sure we ended with you guys, with all of us here in Arizona. And I think a lot of you, the reason why you're here tonight and the reason why we don't have enough seats for everybody is that you feel something is terribly wrong with the country and you're kind of sick and tired of just doing the same sort of things. Like for, people ask me all the time, they say, Charlie, what can I do actually to save the country? And they're like, I do everything I've been told. I watched Tucker Carlson. I bought the pillow. Like, I did everything I was supposed to do, right? By the way, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com, just so we're clear. No, seriously. And if you guys are moving in as high school to college kids, the best Giza dream sheets you could imagine. But no, in all seriousness, it's kind of one of these questions of what else can I do to save the country? And this is why I think that our Turning Point USA activists are doing such a you're making such a meaningful difference, honestly, because you've done the most important thing as a start, which is you've decided to be the same person in public that you are in private. And you want to know one of the biggest issues we have in America is that we have 75 million people, a large percentage of that, they're afraid to tell anyone else that they're a conservative out of fear of being fired, fear of being mocked and ridiculed, and they're right. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't speak out. So people say a lot, they say, Charlie, you know, if only my fraternity or sorority knew that I was a conservative, I'd get kicked out, or my friends would know, or my boss would know. And you think to yourself, are you really free in that sense? That you always kind of have to wear a different uniform, or you have to kind of change what camouflage you put on when you leave your apartment or your house? And one of the things that people complain about most is cancel culture. I hate the term. I never liked cancel culture. I think it's overly simplistic, quite honestly. But the reason why cancel culture, whatever, you know, however you want to define it, is powerful is partially because we make it so, is partially because we allow the other people to have a lot of power over our lives, is that we say, okay, I'll speak out, but if it means that I might get called a bad name, then maybe I'm just going to kind of sit down and let someone speak for me. And the most important thing that I want you to take away from the speech tonight is that you want in your life to try to be a free person in the sense that you don't have to pretend to the people around you you're something you're not. And this happens all the time, whether it be family members or friends or relatives, where all of a sudden it's, you know, it's going to happen next week at Thanksgiving. I guarantee it, half the room, it'll experience with this. Where all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, you know, that 19-year-old cousin of yours that goes to University of Texas Austin that took a single sociology class, right? And they got the whole world figured out, everything. And they say, you know what I hate? I hate rich old white men saying that we have to control women's bodies. And you'll have a decision to make. You know, it might be very early on in the meal, right? When you kind of want to blow it all up. You have a decision of whether or not you're going to confront that lunacy and that insanity and that venom with truth and, of course, with grace. Or are you just going to kind of let it pass by and you are going to just basically say, you know what, I don't want to upset the apple cart. Now, let me be very clear. I'm not saying you should just be bombastic and rude about it, but I think we all know what happens as soon as you challenge, you know, that kind of circumstance. One of the reasons we're in the position we're in and people feel alone in events like this are so incredibly popular and we need to find bigger rooms to do events like this is because what some of the things we're going to talk about tonight are considered thought crimes in American society. Some things that we are, for example, I'll just kind of give you one example. Only women can get pregnant, men cannot get pregnant. That's like a thought crime in America today. You think I'm kidding. By the way, it's a very simple thing, right? You're not allowed to say that. Or there's only two genders, right? Or America's not systemically racist. Or we're the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. Constitution's the greatest political document ever written. I could go on. You know, she needs borders. Very simple things that if you said that in certain polite society, people would start to pay a price. And my charge is a difficult one, is we need more people willing to start to pay that price. Now, here's where I am given hope, though, is that I am seeing amazing, regular, normal people be willing to lose their jobs and their careers because they don't want to take a vaccine. That's a pretty amazing thing. Is anyone dealing with that right now? I don't want to out you, but yeah. And does the University of Arizona, do they mandate the vaccine? What are they? I don't. For employees? Okay. For employees or students? Employees? Yeah, I mean, let me just say this, that the governor needs to sign an executive order immediately saying that any state employee should not be forced to take a vaccine against their will. It's that simple. We need to demand that out of the state leadership. And so, and by the way, I get so frustrated about this. This is the ultimate logical fallacy that we're all living through, meaning that you are not allowed to even have an opinion or even say something after a year and a half of this circus if you're not a doctor and you don't have a degree. Like, excuse me, like, can I just ask some very simple questions? Just ask some questions, right? Like, why is it that the most vaccinated countries on the planet have the highest COVID rates they've ever had? Like, that's an interesting question, right? Why is it the most vaccinated state in the country has the highest COVID rate of any state in the country, Vermont? You know, why is it that Joe Rogan, who I have a lot of respect for, don't agree with him on everything, obviously, but he's very entertaining and hilarious, that he decides to take ivermectin and he gets smeared as, say, it's a horse dewormer, even though ivermectin is a drug for human beings and won a Nobel Prize to help human beings and cured river blindness in millions of people in Africa. But we're not allowed to talk about that. Why is it, and Aaron Rodgers, by the way, I've never liked Aaron Rodgers, but I have so much respect for him after this last week. I got to say, what Aaron Rodgers did took a lot of courage, I have to tell you. And, but we're not even allowed to talk about it. And I think one of the great injustices of my life is the fact that people that have already had the virus are then being forced to get a vaccine for the virus that they might have. Where's the conversation on natural immunity? Where's the conversation on natural inoculation? How many people have already had the virus here? Yeah, well, there you go, right? Now, here's a very interesting question. The most important question. I don't think we got a picture of this last time. So if Connor or Mikey's here, take the question. How many people, now think about it before you raise your hand. How many people here have a friend or someone you know of or yourself that had an adverse event to this vaccine? Raise your hand. That's insane. I want you to think about this. You put your hands down. We are told it's 100% safe and effective. So either everyone here is lying or there's something else going on we're not even allowed to talk about. By the way, I've done this at every one of our tour stops lately. The same sort of portion of hands, about half. So they're told, oh, no, it's a 1 in 1,000,000 shot. So let's just go through some statistics here. If half the hands in this room go up and we're told it's 1 in 1,000,000, something's totally out of whack here. Again, you make your own decision. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your own medical decisions. If you want to get vaccinated, whatever, right? If you want to go to McDonald's after this, like whatever. I hope it works out for you, right? Taco Bell or whatever. You know, it's part of kind of living in a civil society. But at the same time, if you're going to just say, oh, no, we're going to mandate it and then we're not going to allow discussion around it, then all of a sudden you're starting to go into a direction that I think all of us know exactly where this is headed. And what I have been personally shocked about, and we've spoken out about this early, is how some conservatives have kind of just played along with this. Isn't it amazing? It's like, oh yeah, we're all for the freedom and liberty thing as long as you do exactly what we tell you to do when we want to do it, or else we're going to destroy your life. It's like, hold on a second. Freedom and liberty is not some sort of soundbite that you put on a bumper sticker for your campaign. It's like when you get elected in office, it's what matters the most. It's the moments that matter the most. That's why we put you in there. And you should applaud that. That's the most important thing. I could go on about that topic for a while. And by the way, we need to enforce the law that's already passed here in Arizona, which against the mask mandates and against the vaccine mandates. And that's a new thing that we're seeing, is that it's one thing to have the law on the books. James Madison and Cicero, the one-year Roman consul, both had a very similar quote. Madison basically copied from Cicero. Madison said, who's the father of the United States Constitution, he said, the more voluminous the laws, you know, the more injustice there will be, right? So the more laws that we have added to the books, all of a sudden, you're going to have the people in charge that get to decide what laws they want to enforce, right? Cicero said it better, honestly. He said, the more laws, the less justice. And what we've done is we have all these laws on the books. Therefore, the people that then enforce the laws get to pick and choose who they actually want to go after. I'll prove it to you. That if you show up to a rally or you show up to a city burning while the National Guard is not there and the police have been told to stand down and you defend yourself because someone's trying to kill you and that someone trying to kill you is a child rapist, you're going to get tried for first degree murder and your family has to go into debt to try to defend you, which we're seeing right now with Kyle Rittenhouse. And by the way, if this was 1892 and it was the KKK trying to take over a city and it was a black 17-year-old that took a gun to go to the burning city, we would have like a national holiday to that young man. Seriously. Now, I'm not saying that's what we need for Kyle. I'm not saying we need like a national holiday, but I'm saying that it would be, everyone would say this is the most amazing and heroic thing I've ever seen. But instead, let's just be as blunt and honest about it. Kyle Rittenhouse checks a box of the type of, let's say, enemy they want to create. And we saw this earlier with what happened with the Nicholas Sandman case. You guys remember that with the Covington kids? Remember the Covington kids where Nicholas Sandman on the steps of the Capitol, where that lunatic came up with the drum and started banging it in his face. And we were told that the young kid was the one that's provoking and saying racist things. Total lie. You know, totally exonerated, won his lawsuits. But no, the thing that Kyle Rittenhouse did wrong is that he fit the perfect type of archetype, where Joe Biden came out and said that Kyle Rittenhouse is a white supremacist. Said that on Twitter. Hope he gets sued for that one day in civil court. There is no evidence of that. But instead, here's the essence of it, is that there was a picture, the same thing that happened on the southern border when you had Border Patrol agents on horseback, and they said, oh, they're using whips to go after migrants. Total lie. It's called a bridle or a saddle. You ever ride a horse before? New York Times weirdo, right? And of course not. Never even been west of the Mississippi River, let alone ever mounted a horse, right? No, it's a whip. No, but all they have is the narrative. So Kyle Rittenhouse, they had the picture they wanted. AR-15, mouth wide open, young, white, Trump-loving, a green shirt and hat backwards, looking like he's kind of playing the insurrectionist. Boom. Put him in jail. And that's not the way we do things in our country. And what is actually giving me hope, and it's actually our, I think, path towards resolution in this country, is that you can fire John Gruden from being the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, which is insane, and go into that one later, without due process and all this. But thankfully, there's still this like shred, this like little bit of a micron of a gift that our founding fathers gave us 245 years ago, which is the United States Constitution. Despite how many op-eds MSNBC writes or the New York Times writes, despite how much they hate Kyle Rittenhouse, guess what? He still gets a trial by a jury. He still gets a lawyer. Because without it, if they had their chance, just lock him up indefinitely. Right? The same way that we have the sort of justice that kicks Donald, justice, I put in quotes, kicks Donald Trump off Twitter because we don't like the things he says. Just get rid of him. But for Kyle Rittenhouse, he had this opportunity. It was so obviously self-defense. We knew this early on. And I came out in support of Kyle early. And so many people are like, why are you doing that? Because you see the video. You see what's happening. But then you've seen the last couple weeks, all of a sudden, the Constitution play out in real time. Have you guys been following this in one way or the shape? Okay, I'm good. And by the way, you should. If you haven't been, it's been one of the most instructive examples of what's wrong with the country and how to fix it. And basically, despite the prosecution's best attempts to try and slander, to try and misrepresent, to try and literally tamper with witnesses, as we have seen, all of a sudden you have this kind of cantankerous old judge who actually still loves the Constitution. Like, I didn't know that actually still existed. It actually makes me kind of happy. Where he starts to come in and say, wait a second, you're not allowed to do that. Like, you're supposed to play by the rules here. And what I saw in the Rittenhouse trials, oh my goodness, our society's been missing impartial referees for the last 30 years. It's like we've been playing a sports game without someone saying, like, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to just tackle someone by the face mask, like 15 yards. Instead, it's like totally no rules in society in the last 20 years. You guys have seen that, especially in the last couple years, right? If someone gets outraged enough, Dave Chappelle has to cancel it from Netflix because he's hilarious. Because he insulted, and by the way, it's really interesting with the Dave Chappelle thing. You see the transgender thing that gets treated more seriously than the racial thing. Do you guys see that recently? That like in the hierarchy of oppression, it's like if a black person, it's the oppression Olympics, right? You have to always like be, it's a constant race, right? By the way, what's above transgender though is the medical thing. What comes first is obedience to the technocracy and the scientific state. Second is now the transgender and third is the racial thing. But it's been, and you see that by the way of how BLM, Black Lives Matter, was ignored when they said that we don't want to get vaccinated in New York, you know, because black people don't want to get vaccinated. Like, yeah, sit down and shut up. We're still going to do this. But it was interesting with Chappelle because he goes after the transgender. I don't even know what he said. I think I saw a clip of it. I can't remember. I know it was hilarious. And they just do stage outs and walkouts and the whole thing. And Chappelle obviously, you know, survived it. But we saw this chaos in the last couple years. I could go to so many different examples. But in the Rittenhouse trial, all of a sudden, I was like, wait a second. No, there's a process for this. And this lunatic that calls himself a prosecutor, I don't know if you saw that, he's waving guns at the jury like he's a total psychopath. No, seriously. He's like, takes out an AR-15 with a with his finger on the trigger. It's like the worst form you could imagine. But this is an important point, is that we don't know what's going to happen in this trial. Betting odds is Kyle Rittenhouse gets acquitted and walks. But understand that regardless of your own opinion of the incident, and by the way, there really is only one right opinion of the incident, let's be very clear, right? Is that Kyle Rittenhouse went to go administer medical aid and was attacked by a couple psychopaths and he defended himself once a gun was pointed at him. Like, that's what happened. You know, and you could have your own personal opinion about whether or not Kyle should have been there or not, but that's, you don't go to jail for making, you know, for going to a place that, you know, you don't think you should be. Anyway, is that the Constitution was designed for moments like this. And so if we're asking ourselves, like, how do we heal our country and how do we move forward? It's, well, let's re-embrace those principles. Guess what those are? No rushing to judgment. Go figure, right? Allowing people to have their side of the story told before the punishment is administered. Actually valuing facts and reason above pathology, feelings, and emotion. And we've seen this in a variety of different ways, especially in the last couple years, where another really good example of this is the Steele dossier that was used to go spy on President Donald Trump from the FBI. We were told that all these things are true. Then 6 years later, we are told that the Steele dossier was completely manufactured and was an act of fiction. And I suppose the message and the takeaway is that we've been given an unbelievable gift, everybody. Is that in other countries, someone like Kyle Rittenhouse gets locked up with no questions whatsoever. Now, let me be very clear. We got so many constitutional violations happening on a daily basis. It's unbelievable. That needs to be our guide, though. It's like that needs to be the centerpiece. Is that document was written for a reason. So I got so upset when I saw this ridiculous infrastructure signing thing today. Drove me nuts. $1.2 trillion that we don't have to go spend money on whatever. We don't know. But meanwhile, you have, and this is the other kind of the inverse of this, of the destruction of the rule of law, is you have journalists that now disagree with the regime, having their door kicked in and their apartment searched and being put in handcuffs. I'm talking, of course, Project Veritas, James O'Keefe. And this, regardless of your political affiliation, this should horrify you. Even liberals are coming out and speaking out against this. So let me tell you what's happened. James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, they have been, They've been hitting home runs lately. Let me just put it that way. They've been exposing Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, Health and Human Services. They've been going after election integrity. You name it, he's been going after it. So he was approached in the fall of 2020 where someone came up to him and said, oh, hey, I have Ashley Biden's diary, okay? Now, why this is a concern of the FBI, no one has explained why the theft of a diary is the concern of the FBI while we have a southern border that's wide open and children are getting sex trafficked every single day across the southern border. Why the FBI doesn't care about that and they care about some diary is insane to me. Anyway. And so he doesn't publish the diary. He tries to give it to law enforcement. A year later then, he gets a knock on the door. His journalists get put in handcuffs. His whole apartment gets searched. His phone gets confiscated. His internal records are now in the hands of the government. And without an indictment of a crime, mind you. I want you to think about that. That we have now in the post-constitutional order that if you say something that the regime doesn't like, it could be a knock on your door. Now you're like, oh, Charlie, whatever, that doesn't apply to me. Like, go read some 20th century history. Because that's already playing out in real time. And so what James O'Keefe is pushing back rather effectively. And you see that also with the double standard of justice, the more laws, the less justice, of what happened in the last 3 to 4 days with Steve Bannon, where Steve Bannon is being held in contempt of Congress. Meanwhile, Eric Holder did the exact same thing in 2012 and was never indicted. And so part of the problem, I think, is that some conservatives are under the false impression that we're still playing under that same book of rules that was there 20 or 30 years ago. In certain corners and certain places, that's still intact. Kenosha, Wisconsin, I suppose they still follow the Constitution. And good for Kyle that that's the case. And that should be a roadmap further for that. But honestly, when you look at the Southern District of New York, is that I don't want our elected officials to go sign infrastructure deals with Joe Biden. I want answers. Why the FBI, with guns drawn and with hammer, with the, you know what I'm talking about, sledgehammers, are going into apartments and searching for your personal articles and your effects. Because it's a journalist we don't like. I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine that the New York Times got their hands on the Donald Trump Jr. diary. I want you to imagine the Washington Post got their hands on the Ivanka Trump diary. And Donald Trump sent the FBI to the offices of the Washington Post. What, do you think that there would be a little bit of attention to that? He would be impeached over that. He would. He got impeached for a phone call. They would definitely impeach him. And guess what? He would deserve it. Of course he would. I mean, you're sending the FBI to go try and right the wrongs and intimidate people that might try to publish details about your personal family. And so we all see what this is happening and we see the significance of it. But I think we must understand that this current moment that we're in is going to require a renewal of the American citizen. And I understand that it's tempting to not want to care about a lot of this. You can go one of two ways. I see this. I either see people get so far into this, they're all in. They're like, I'm going to go run for school board. I'm going to go start a Turning Point chapter. I'm going to do whatever it takes. But I know a lot of you are tempted at times not to want to watch the news. You're like, I can't handle it anymore. I can't do this. Like, it's so rigged. It's so backwards. You have to reject cynicism. You have to. Because what they are more afraid of than anything else is the people actually starting to rise up and question all this nonsense that they are doing. And every time that happens, they lose. Just look at Virginia. Look what happened in Virginia 2 weeks ago. What happened in Virginia was moms and dads started showing up in Loudoun County and starting asking questions, and it changed the entire dynamics of that state in a very serious and very, very profound way. So I want to talk a little bit about, I actually didn't do this at all in any of our other campus tours. Kind of just, I'm 28, so I'm kind of like, I'm transgenerational, so I get to pick what generation I want to be in. So I've decided I'm Generation Z, not millennial. I know you'll understand, you could pick everything else nowadays. So why not? I'm decided I'm younger, so you're welcome. So when I say our generation, it's just how I identify, okay? It's my own choice. So our generation, I want to talk to two audiences at once. I want to talk first to students and people that are in college or in high school or recently graduated college. And I want to talk to parents and grandparents. Because I think both are currently on the conservative side missing a component. Okay? Let me start with parents first. Okay? Far too often I hear from parents and grandparents nothing but disdain and complaining about the younger generation. They don't get it. They don't know what it's like to work. And by the way, sometimes that is true. I agree that you got some schleps around, okay? But I've looked at the baby boomer generation. They're not all rock stars either, okay? So, you know, let's just understand enough of the condescending intergenerational lecturing, okay? Now, I get it. There's some young people that I probably want to get more stuff than want to work. But again, I don't think that's a generational thing. I think that's a human thing, okay? So we have to kind of press pause on that. And we also have to understand that one of the main accusations that someone that's a, you know, let's say Gen Xer or boomer know how to pull themselves up by the bootstraps. They're half right. And then I will segue to the younger generation. Let me tell you why they're half right. There is a sentiment that has set in where victimhood is a currency. I hate it. They're right on this, that victimhood is given a higher platform than it should. That victimhood of kind of, I get to complain about how oppressed I am, it gets taken way too seriously. However, we would be fooling ourselves if we said that this generation is getting the same deal that college graduates got in the 1980s. That is a lie. And that young people have been lied to, they have been locked down, literally. They have been massed against their will. They've been demoralized. There's a war on young men in this country, and it's hurting women as well. And for parents, I would offer a little bit of a balance in how you talk about it. Of yes, if you're seeing someone that's just trying to complain all the time and be a victim, fine. But you're dealing with a demoralized generation. You understand that. And let me tell you why. So I get asked all the time, Charlie, why is Bernie Sanders so popular? And the easy, cheap, sloppy answer is, oh, people just want free stuff. Again, fine. 15 to 20% just want to smoke weed and play video games and just like get checks. Fine. Whatever. I'm not necessarily fighting that. But no, most young people, most students out there, they see Bernie Sanders not as an ambassador of free stuff, but instead someone that can offer them freedom. And people laugh at that. They're like, oh, what do you mean? Bernie Sanders offering freedom. He's the opposite of freedom. High taxes and all this. Oh, no. There's a generation of young people that did what they were told to do. They took the AP classes. They borrowed money they didn't have to go study things that don't matter, to go to garbage colleges in stuffed classes for years to go find jobs that don't exist. And they're 27 and 28, and they're $35, $80, $150,000 in debt. They're not getting married. They look around to their peers and there's like a directionless crisis. And they say, you know what? I was lied to because I went and studied North African lesbian poetry at the University of Arizona or whatever it is, right? Whatever, right? I'm not sure if that's a major here or whatever, right? Or, you know, South African migratory bird studies from Arizona State. Okay, so we're an equal opportunity offender. But how can you blame an 18-year-old if their parents say you must go to college to succeed? Here's a good thing for parents to look in this room and see. How many of you know someone that dropped out of college? Raise your hand. Yeah. 41% of people that go to college drop out. 41%! We have way too many people going to college in this country, and no one wants to say it out loud. I guarantee you if I went person by person here, college kid after college kid, you'd say, oh yeah, that class is a waste of time. That class is a waste of money, right? Am I correct? It's a scam. You do not need the degree to succeed unless you're in a couple very finite fields. Doctor, lawyer, engineer, psychology. Nothing against you. You're probably not going to get a job in that field. It's true. And so then you have resentment of 28-year-olds that study something and they're like, this was useless. So I got to go find a whole new way to retrain myself. And by the time they're 29, they look at their parents who are then lecturing them, like, why don't you have your life together? When I was 29, I was moving up in this company and all this. It was so nice and so easy. Hold on a second. Have you seen the price of housing? So here's the other thing. It's like, okay, then we're going to lock down everything for our generation. So it's really hard to find jobs. No gyms, no sporting events, No social activities. So you can't meet people. So you're super miserable. Most suicidal generation in American history, by the way. Most drug addicted generation in American history. I'd go through it. And then when finally Gen Z and millennials, like the country opens up again, they're like, okay, I'm going to go buy a home. Oh, everything's like 50% more expensive in the Scottsdale real estate market, literally in 18 months. And so then you ask yourself the question, what kind of political strategy do you think they're going to embrace? Are they going to embrace the right that just has nothing but condescending things to say about them? Like, oh yeah, you're a bunch of AOCs that want free stuff. And I don't blame young people to say like, you know what? I have nothing in common with this. Like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go for the person that's at least going to kind of give me a fair deal because my parents didn't go $85,000 in debt when they graduated. And I'll get into the kind of the other side of it, which is the talk to students in a second. But my message for parents and grandparents out there is that, first of all, there's a massive opportunity to strike balance between you. There's a huge opportunity, and not be for student loan forgiveness, which I'm totally against, by the way. I'm totally against student loan forgiveness because some of you worked your way through college. Some of you go to community college. Some of you didn't go to college. Some of you got scholarships, all those sorts of things, right? But outside of student loan forgiveness, there's a way to say, you know what? We're going to make it easier to get married and have kids in this country. We're going to make it easier that you don't have to go in debt to go pursue the same lifestyle that your parents were able to do. Like, if you do not, and this is another important thing, and Phoenix is going the wrong direction in this, totally. We're becoming a country of renters, not owners. It is the lowest home ownership of any generation in American history, which is millennials. And soon to be Generation Z. Why? Oh, it's because they went $85,000 into debt to go study, you know, whatever, like Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility or 1619 Project or How to Be an Anti-Racist by Eben Rex Kendi, whatever it is, right? And they're like, well, I learned how awful America is and I learned to check my privilege and I could say my pronouns in 5 different languages. But I don't know how to fix a ventilation unit. Wish I did. Like when my car breaks down, I'm useless. Like, whatever. Go bring in the mechanic who's going to charge $700 I don't have to go fix this. And then in this amazing, stunning turn of events, the very people that your parents never wanted you to become, and let's just be very honest, most parents, they live vicariously through their kids. And this is, for parents out there, I'm going to say this super delicately, parents don't want their kids to become plumbers. They don't. No, I know. I know some people laugh, but it's true. It's like there is something like, I don't want my kid to have to sweat for a living. And it's true. Most parents are like, I don't want my kids to work construction. And it's like, instead, I'd rather have them become like far left-wing activists and atheists than work in construction. Like anything but that, right? So I live in Scottsdale. And I'm telling you what, when I call my plumber, I mean, he like owns the town. You call in, he shows up whenever he wants, by the way. It's like a range of like 19 hours. I'll be there between 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Like, thanks. Why so specific, right? Shows up. And by the way, you want to talk about like extortionist prices. It's just like whatever he wants to charge because there's no supply of plumbers. There's no supply of carpenters because we decided we don't need those people. No, we need a bunch of people tapping on their computer about how racist we are. Or people that can like repeat the incantation of diversity, equity, inclusion, or whatever. And so then the plumber shows up. It's like, yeah, you need a new Johnson rod. Okay, sure. Yeah, okay. I know nothing about this stuff. Like, okay, sure, great. And by the way, without plumbers, like, good luck having a decent society without plumbers, by the way. And the same goes for mechanics and carpenters and all this. And then I asked him, I said, how's business? And he said, it's the best it's ever been. He's like, you know, we have more work than we know what to do with. I can literally charge you whatever I want. That's what he says to me. I'm like, oh, really? Like, this is a really, like, phenomenal negotiating position I'm in, right? And I said, where'd you go to college? He said, oh, of course I didn't go. I mean, that would be a waste of time. I said, what are you earning a year? Plumber in Scottsdale. He's like, I'll clear $375,000 this year. You think I'm kidding? No debt. Couple employees. 1099. Statistically, it'll be lucky if half this room ever earns $375,000 in the next 15 years. And that's not an insult. It's not. I'm just saying statistically. But he's the enemy, right? He's the person that parents don't want to see their kid become. He's the deplorable. He's the flyover. He's the smelly Walmart guy. And yeah, he was like mildly overweight, like whatever. But it's like, you know, ripped jeans, like whatever. But nicer car than I have, I can tell you that much. Like, my goodness. But then you ask yourself the question, and I asked him, the final question I asked, I said, so are you happy? He said, of course I am. And I said, why? He said, it's not about the money. He said, because I know that I have purpose. It's like, I have a problem and I fix it. And I have a problem and I fix it. And there's a problem and I fix it. And I said, oh, so you have satisfaction. He's like, of course. I live a great life. I said, thanks so much. You know, $4,000 or whatever it was. And then you moved on, right? Wasn't that much, but it was a lot, right? Thanks for your time. It's like New York lawyers aren't charging what Scottsdale plumbers are charging, right? And I got to thinking, and it's nothing new that I haven't said. And obviously I didn't go to college. I have my own very strong opinions about it. But I think it's more clear than ever is that you as students, and I obviously say this, a lot of you are currently in college, but you know it. You're participating in a scam that your parents made you go through. You know it's true. Most of you wouldn't be there if you didn't want to. How many people wouldn't be in college if it wasn't for your parents? Raise your hand. Of course. It's a lot of people. And so I'm not saying drop out immediately, but that might be wise. But when we talk to young people and we ask, why are they going to socialist directions? Put yourself a little bit in their shoes. It's not that they're like big admirers of Cuba, Venezuela. There's some people that are like that. It's not that they even think government can like run things better. It's, we've been lied to. We've been scammed. I have no money. I own nothing. How much worse could it get? And it could get a lot worse, but you understand what I'm saying. Okay. So then let me transition to the student and younger person part of it. Okay. Which is, it's in some ways, it's going to sound like I'm contradicting the other side of it. Which is, okay, everything I said was true. Stop complaining. So it's everything I just said. Seriously, you live in a great country. Despite the fact you own nothing and you're in debt, you still have the ability to make a lot out of your life. Go do it. That, go find something to be responsible for. Go wake up earlier. Stop blaming other people for your problems. Challenge yourself every single day. Those things are always true. And most importantly, get God in your life. It's the most important thing. And so now I'm going to commit some thought crimes. Why not? So it's the most miserable generation in American history because a lot of it, you know, I think muscular work is a core component to human existence. I really do. And kind of, it's part of who we are. And you just kind of remove that. You just put people behind a screen all day long. And like, oh yeah, they're going to be super happy. I actually don't think that's true. But beyond that, we know what the real problem is. You have a generation that is the least religious generation in American history, by far. And yeah, I'll go here. Okay, I was perplexed by this. So Arizona Christian University came out with a study, and maybe you guys could help me with this. I thought it to be ridiculous, but maybe it's true, that 39% of Gen Z is LGBT. 39%? Do you guys believe that? Do you think, like, just based on your conversation, I thought it was ridiculous. Okay, let me ask a question. Raise your hand if you think that's about right. Raise your hand. Okay. Raise your hand if you think that's about wrong. Okay. So it's most people think it's wrong. So let's pretend it's 20%. Whatever. And I'm not going to get into it. I just thought it was like 39%. That's unbelievable. I mean, and so least religious generation, and they're wondering where their place is in the world. And that shouldn't surprise you, is that the more secular America has become, the less free it will be. Is that you could try all these different secular replacement religions, which we are trying, by the way. And make no mistake, there is a high priestess that many young people, they basically tithe to. They do sacraments to. I'm talking about Greta Thunberg, of course. You think I'm kidding? She's a high priestess of the pagan climate change religion. No, I'll prove it to you. It's true. Everything about her has religion laced in it. So it's a different type of religion. World is going to end in 10 years. Where have I heard that before? I mean, like, geez. By the way, I'm not trying to insult anyone's eschatology. It's just kind of like, world's going to fall apart. We need dramatic action. We need unity. We need meetings. She has like a core code of beliefs. And it gives people purpose. It's like when you're lacking purpose and your whole existence is now, you know, we're going to go save some sort of bird or tree in Northern California, gives you something to do. You have a villain, you have an organized way to do it. Same sort of thing with parts of the BLM movement. Parts of the BLM movement is a secularized type religion, is that it gives people purpose, identity, and connection. So you have all these different type of replacements that are just kind of, same with some of these socialist movements and all these sorts of different things. And look, I'm not here to tell you any sort of particular religious belief. I'm happy to go into that if you guys want. Obviously, you know where I stand, which Jesus is the king of the world, but I'm happy to go into that if you guys want. And so, but if you think that, and this is, I'll close on these couple thoughts. So if you think that you can be free absent moral guardrails, you're kidding yourself. And so this is the important thing, is that we have a false definition, a misleading definition that we tell ourselves of liberty in America, is that liberty is not being able to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. That is not liberty. Liberty is doing what you ought to do and pursuing virtue. And if you think that the country can remain free without some form of moral guardrails or guidelines, I don't think that's going to work. There's a great quote at Harvard Business School, the Harvard Law School. They're going to take it down as soon as they realize how wise it is. And it says, the law is the wise restraint that keeps men free. So let me just give the best example I can of this. By the way, this is totally contradictory to what any professor will tell you, what popular culture will tell you, or what anyone outside of these walls will tell you, right? Unless you go to a great church like Calvary Chapel or Oroville. Which is that the people who do whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it, they're the least free people in the world. And I'll prove it to you. You ever spend time around an alcoholic? Are they free? It's a great example, isn't it? That they do what they want to do whenever they want to do it. And I'm not minimizing alcoholism. It's a very real thing, obviously. And there's other components outside of agency and self-will and all that sorts of things. It could be a diagnosable, you know, clinical condition. With that being said, just indulging whenever you want doesn't keep you happy. And the message that we should be giving college freshmen at the University of Arizona is not that your parents are the worst people ever and that what you were taught was a lie. Instead, it should be this. It's what you don't do at the University of Arizona that will keep you happy. That's what kids need to hear. It's the parties you don't go to. It's the drugs you don't try. It's the drinks you don't have. It's the relationships you don't engage with. It's being able to say no and have self-control. That's actually going to keep you free. Not the other way. It's the other way around, right? It's that, no, freedom is indulging. Freedom is being young only once, or whatever, YOLO, you only live once. And maybe when you're young, you can get away with it. Maybe you get it out of your system. Don't recommend it, but whatever. But you start to realize that I need to do more the next time to try to make it feel as exciting as it was the last time. And it's like all of a sudden the guardrails start, you know, it's like the window starts to change. It's like I have to outdo myself a little bit. And this is one of the things, I could get a little bit into dating and all that stuff, which always gets people's attention. I won't say this to young women, but young women will appreciate what I'm saying. I'll talk to young men. So I always say this, and all the young ladies always applaud when I say this. I say, young men, you got to get your act together, okay? You got to get your act together. And all the young ladies are like, oh, yes, absolutely. So a lot of young men are directionless. It's like prolonged adolescence, right? It's like it's mature infants, right? And so, but it's not all young men's fault, by the way, because they live in a society that coddles them, that infantilizes them, and emasculates them, right? But You want to know a characteristic that young women want to find in men? It's a young man that can control himself. It's a young man that can go 90 days without drinking. It's a young man that can say no to all the other pressures. Because it's someone's like, wow, if he's able to say no to somebody else, he'll make good decisions and he'll be able to protect me. Like, that's a really cool thing. And that's really rare. Instead, it's kind of like, yeah, I really don't have much control over me. I don't know if I'm going to show up to class. I don't know what I'm going to show up to. I don't really know what I'm doing. And that creates miserable people. It creates a generation where, by the way, you have more people committing suicide than dying from the Fauci virus in this country. more people committing suicide than dying of the Fauci virus. And that should be a fire alarm, shouldn't it? Where you have suicide rates going up the way they are, drug usage, alcoholism, all these different sorts of things. And part of it is that we put on a pedestal the next dopamine rush. You know, the next thing that's going to feel really good at that moment. By the way, I'm not moralizing. I want to be very clear. We've all made mistakes in our life. I'm not here to say, like, I'm better than you or anything. That's not what I'm saying. Instead, I'm saying, decide today to start to change things, if that makes sense, okay? Is that you'll be freer, you'll be happier, you'll be more thankful. And then I'll end on that, which is we have the most miserable generation in American history because it's the least thankful generation ever to exist. It's that the divide in America politically, socioeconomically, and partly religiously is a divide over half the country that is thankful to be in America and to have life, and the other half to have, they have ingratitude and venom, and they have anger towards that. If you are thankful for something, you're far less likely to want to go make a sign and protest outside of that something and destroy it. You think, I love Thanksgiving. It's a beautiful day. It's coming up right around the corner. And it's a uniquely American holiday and celebration. And what I love about Thanksgiving is that it's a whole day to give thanks to the transcendent. It's, but if you think what you have around you is actually not worthy of thanks, if you don't even think there is a transcendent, why even say thank you? Why be thankful? And this is why you have the generation that is, they have more access to more information. They have supercomputers in the right-hand pocket. This should be the happiest generation, right? Guys, you have Uber Eats. You have as much food as you want, right? You could communicate in an instant. You could FaceTime. Wow, you have Twitter. And yet it's actually exposing the opposite. It's that the more that technology is spread, and the more access you have to these things, is that you have the two worst combination of things happening. Is the ability to do whatever you want whenever you want to do it, and a society that says you should be able to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. And they're both competing into those two separate things. And so, yeah, just to kind of close that out, is we need to be thankful. We need to be thankful for our country, for our family, for who, just for life. And if there's anyone here tonight that is like, man, I just can't quite figure out my place in the world, start with gratitude. There's something you must be thankful for. Now, I always say this, that if we brought everyone up here, we could have a nonstop parade of things that are going wrong in your life. That's not the point. The point is that gratitude is the fruit that makes all of the things taste sweet. It is a necessary component to a civil society and honoring things that came before you. The only Ten Commandment that came with a civilizational promise is honor your mother and father, so that you may live long in the land of which you are in. Why? It's because if you're not thankful for those that came before you, everything's going to fall apart. And many of the people that are in charge and that are running our country are not thankful. They're the opposite of that. And we have to be ambassadors of those very, very, of that very important issue. Okay, let's do some questions. And God bless you guys. Thank you. So. Jonah, raise your hand. Jonah, your name's Jonah. We got two Jonas. That's okay. It's kind of cool. It's a great book in the Bible. We'll talk about all about Nineveh and the lessons from Jonah if you guys want. We could do a lesson on that. No, I'm kidding. We'll do some questions. If you guys want to start filing up and lining up, we're going to give some of our volunteers an opportunity to ask questions first because they helped work this event. And then you guys, let's line up. We'll go as long as we can. A couple things. If this is obviously a predominant conservative audience. If someone from the left wants to ask a question, show them opportunity, show them respect. Do not interrupt them, and give them the decency that we don't always get from them. So, okay, let's do questions.
Hey, Charlie, thank you for coming to U of A. That's awesome. I'm wondering, what do you think about the conservative movement's recent decision to embrace the LGBTQ community?
I think you're talking about the Mar-a-Lago thing, right? Yeah. So I think it's a mistake. Now, look, we have people that work for us at Turning Point USA that are gay. I've always said that we need to try to build a coalition in the conservative movement that prioritizes liberty. But I think it was a mistake to try and say that it's now a stated coalition position of the RNC to try to say that we no longer hold traditional marriage. I could get into the kind of the technical parts of why it was a mistake, but we should be doing the opposite, quite honestly. We should be reaffirming the nuclear family at a time when it's being under attack from every single direction and at every single turn. And if that's not good enough for people, at the very least, in my opinion, it should have been just kind of agnostic position. Just kind of like, we're not going to comment on this. We're not going to do that. But I think that I know a lot of pastors that are very, very upset about that. But I have a lot of respect for the people that run the RNC. I know them very well. Disagreements are part of civil society. And I know a lot of, I've been going back and forth with them. And so they'll figure it out. But I think it was a mistake. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Charlie, I just want to say thank you for coming out and having some time to talk to us. So I'm actually struggling with a little something right now with Thanksgiving and especially Christmas coming up, is that some of my family members who are unfortunately leftist and ideology liberal are believing that Dr. Fauci is correct in the fact that we should not gather around during the holidays for if you are unmasked or unvaccinated. And so, but I want to bring my family together, and I do not believe that Dr. Fauci has any right to dictate anything that my family does. What should I do in this situation?
Yeah. You know, this is why I believe in the power of the transcendent for moments like this, right? For divine intervention and help with that. I mean, if you really take Fauci seriously, right? Still, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he should be in prison, let alone giving advice on Thanksgiving meals. He should have been locked up a long time ago for what he did to our country and lying under oath to Congress. Be full of grace. But first, I just want to say it's a tragedy what you're going through, that life is not long and that you don't get many times with your family. And the fact that they want you to wear a mask or not gather to prioritize some sort of abstract safetyism thing. It's terrible. I mean, it's really terrible. It's really awful. Not knowing all the facts and circumstances around it. But I struggle to give advice because I would probably blow that conversation up in about 30 seconds or less. But try to be full of grace. But you should follow the biblical commandment to honor your mother and father. But you have to acknowledge the tension that does not mean you should embrace idiocy or evil, right? So honoring your parents is different than loving your parents. Those are two totally different Hebrew words when in the actual 10 statements. It's actually 10 statements, not 10 commandments. It's actually 11, but we can get into that at a different time. So the first is, I am the Lord your God who delivered you from Egypt. Remember, I am the Lord your God who delivered you from Egypt. Pray on it. I don't know if you're Christian or not, but hopefully, I don't know. Okay. James 1:5, pray for wisdom and God will give it to you generously. And so you're in a tough spot. I will be very honest. I might be the worst person to give advice for you on that because I have blown up my fair share of conversations recently about it. But I'll pray for that grace that I don't have for you. So I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hey, Charlie. So my Generation Z is the most diverse, exposed, and educated generation yet, with us practically growing up online, and 59% of us pursuing a degree in university. Furthermore, my generation also happens to be the most left-leaning generation to date by significantly large margins. According to Pew Research Center, 70% of Gen Z disapproves of Donald Trump's performance, with 65% of Gen Z voters voting for Joe Biden. More broadly, 70% of Gen Z also believes the government should be taking a larger, more active role in solving problems, including a 67% net support for Black Lives Matter and the movement's efforts towards criminal justice reform. Gen Z Republicans in particular believe that black people are treated less fairly, significantly more than previous generations, at about 43% versus the millennial Republicans.
What's the question?
Gotcha. My question is, as the founder of Turning Point USA, an organization founded in 2012 that specifically serves to move my generation to the right, do you think that you're failing and why?
Do I think I'm failing? Look around. I mean, goodness. I mean, do I think I'm failing? Don't ever become a prosecutor. So, look, we have huge challenges and hurdles, obviously. We have plenty of successes. No, I don't think I'm failing. I think we have a lot of work to do, and I think we have We've done a lot of good things, and I think we're going to continue to. But I think you bring up some good points in the sense that, yeah, we have a generation that's being indoctrinated from kindergarten to believe total lies. And to believe that black people are mistreated in this country, I mean, it's just such an unbelievable thing to think that. The opposite is actually true. It's the total opposite is true. And I could go through example of example, which is a whole tour on that. So we're going to keep on having a lot of success at Turning Point USA. And I think we're going to be instrumental in helping turn things around. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Steve Phillips. I'm here with my wife, Risa. And first, we want to say thank you. Our daughter, Dominique, is the president of the U of A chapter. And sorry, Dominique, I'm just a proud father. So on to my question on the heels of the last question is, I'm a CPA. I've got several clients who are attorneys, and they tell me that when the truth is on our side, we tell the truth. When the truth is not on our side, we bang our fists on the table and make lots of noise. My generation, I'm 55 years old, we've always followed the rules. But the deck is stacked against us. We are against a opposition that does not follow the rules, breaks the law, breaks the Constitution. Yet we're the generation that will always follow the rules. How do you combat against that? And is it time for us to start banging our fists on the tables?
That's a really good question. So I'll tell you that it's time that our political leaders and our elected officials start to realize that some of the rules that they're following are being ignored by the other side. So let me just give you kind of one really easy example. I could give you two, actually. Let me give you one that applies to Arizona. The first is this, is that immigration is, according to federal statute and federal precedent, a federal issue is what we're always told, right? The states have very little of anything that they could do with immigration, which is not true, but let's just pretend that's the case. Well, the other side has passed sanctuary city measures and sanctuary state measures in Chicago, New York, Seattle, Portland, and Los Angeles, Philadelphia, outwardly stating that you are not allowed to deport illegals in these cities and you are not allowed to work with federal government to do that. So they don't like a law, they just disobey it. And so we look at this, the southern border is wide open. You see what's happening here in Arizona. It's impacting the way of life here in Arizona. It's terrible. Is that the governor of Arizona should ignore the federal government and send the National Guard and go secure the southern border immediately and tell Biden, like, I'm not going to take you seriously anymore. And is that unprecedented? Of course it's unprecedented. This whole chapter we're in is unprecedented. And I wish that wasn't the case. I wish the law, like I said with the Rittenhouse case, was actually followed. I'll give you another example. Gas is really expensive right now, right? Intentionally. You have a regime that wants gas prices to go up to try to usher in electric vehicles and to usher in alternative energy, whatever that is, right? They can't define it. And yet, Republican governors and governors in those states are kind of tolerating it. They're like, well, there's really nothing we can do. Oh, they care something they could do. Every governor, the governor of Montana, who I know, Gianforte, North Dakota, Burham, South Dakota, Nome, Kansas, I don't know her name, Oklahoma State and Abbott in Texas, and John Bel Edwards in Louisiana, they should all immediately say, okay, we're going to go build the Keystone XL pipeline. We don't care what Biden has to say. We're sending them back to work. We're going to send the hard hat construction workers back to work, and we're going to build the pipeline. And you're going to have to go arrest a bunch of welders and construction workers. What am I getting at? It's time for us. Both of those examples are constructive, positive ways to bang our fists on the table. Does that make sense? Where I'm not saying let's go burn a Wendy's, right? Or, you know, like what happened during Floydapalooza and that whole thing, right? Or, you know, I'm not saying like, you know, like, for example, George Floyd's cousin or whatever nephew comes out and says, we know all the jurors' names in the Rittenhouse trial. We know where they live and we're filming them, right? No recourse, obviously. I'm not saying do any of that. I'm not saying go do $2 billion worth of damages. I'm not saying go create our own country in Seattle, Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, right? No, I'm saying our version of that needs to be building pipelines, securing the southern border, deputizing the National Guard to go do that, right? Starting an Arizona Border Patrol. That our version of escalation needs to be in pursuit of the law and pursuit of the good, not what the other side does. And I think that contrast is supported by the American people. Because if this is the argument that the moderates will make, right? This is the argument that we're told that's frustrating you. We just got to wait another 3 years to the next election to secure the southern border. Like, we're not going to have a country at that case, right? So it's like, okay, we could wait or we can act. And we're going to act. We're going to act in the pursuit of the law and the good of the citizenry and the nation. I hope that answers your question. And you should be very proud of your daughter. She's doing a great job. So.
So we're talking about a vaccine that was supported by Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Ben Shapiro, 95 out of 100 senators, including 45 Republicans. And the exact stat was 97% effective. Ben Shapiro said it was 97% effective. Never said anything about it being 100% effective. So you're kind of misquoting the stats to kind of strawman the argument. Well, I'm not pro-vaccine mandate or anything like that. I believe in individual liberties, but why is there so much vaccine hesitancy on the conservative side, and how do we get more conservatives to take the vaccine without vaccine mandates?
So let me ask you, what's the most vaccinated state in the country?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Florida?
No, it's Vermont. So, and what state has the highest COVID rates?
I assume it's Vermont.
Yeah, so that's kind of starts some hesitancy, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, so let me ask you another question. What's the most vaccinated country in the world?
Not sure.
Israel,
yeah, okay.
After the third round of boosters, they have some of the highest COVID transmission rates and COVID rates in the world.
Yes, so I think one of the things that you have to do when you're doing a scientific study is compare comparable variables, right? You can't, you know, there's different populations in Vermont and Israel, right, to like a different state.
So Singapore, right, is one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, 84% vaccinated, some of the highest COVID rates.
Sure.
Same for Gibraltar or other places. So let me tell you what's really happening here. First of all, they changed the definition of what a vaccine is. This is a treatment and a questionable one at that. Okay? So I'm going to read some of the VAERS numbers from you, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System from you, but which is the actual numbers that show adverse events with the vaccine. But before I get to that, what's really unusual, and no one will want to debate me on this, I have an open invite for anyone about this, is that why is it that the most vaccinated countries and states have the highest virus transmission rate? And why is it that third world countries and provinces like Uttar Pradesh in India, a province that has 270 million people that widely prescribed ivermectin, has 5 to 10 COVID cases a day? Why is it that poor African nations have been able to flatten the curve and turn the corner on the virus, and yet industrialized wealthy nations like Israel and America haven't? It's because they take anti-malarials with their breakfast food in Central Africa, because malaria is a big issue and hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and vitamin D is proven to show and actually be able to heavily impact that. So I suppose a question is, why should we be peddling this vaccine?
Well, you are peddling, like again.
I'm curious, answer, like,
so I'm saying that you're comparing so many different populations. There's so many other variables you're taking into account. And again, if the vaccine is so bad, why is Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and Ben Shapiro?
That's such a straw man. It's like, I can't disagree with them. I mean, come on. It's like, I mean, that's such a ridiculous point. It's like, I love Donald Trump. I respect Ben Shapiro. They're horribly wrong here. Like, I mean, is that the argument?
It's not the argument. I'm just saying that, like, It's widely supported. It's not just people on the left who are doing this. It's not like a leftist vaccine,
yes,
by any means.
People can be widely wrong about things, like totally wrong. We used to think that the Earth was the center of the universe until the heliocentric theory with Galileo. The whole point of science is consideration and the scientific method and testing your thesis and your hypothesis, right? And so, but let me ask you a question. I'm just asking you. Is like, since when is science a democracy where it's like widely expected? I don't care about the percentage. I care about what's right.
Yeah. And I fully agree with what you're saying. I don't think science should be a democracy like that. And I do think there's a lot of issues with the corruption of science. My overall point is just the facts that you put out might be true, but you're also ignoring a lot of other variables in these comparable populations. Like, well, you can't compare the population of Israel with the population of Uttar Pradesh. Like, how is that?
You're right. Israel has much better health care than Uttar Pradesh. Israel's much wealthier, and Israel has running water and does not have literally 50 million people without toilets.
Yeah.
So you're trying to say that, you know, like, Uttar Pradesh literally has 50 million people without toilets. I would think that COVID would have a more difficult time in that place than Jerusalem. Go ahead.
How are you measuring the cases in Uttar Pradesh? Do they have wide testing available compared to what they have in Israel?
How about this? Deaths. Their deaths are almost nothing from COVID. It's like one thing with testing. It's like if bodies start showing up at the morgue, it's like that's rather universal. And they've totally turned their corner on COVID deaths in India, not to mention Zambia, not to mention Tanzania, not to mention all across Central Africa. And this has been one of the great suppression campaigns is we're not even allowed to talk about these other countries. Singapore, Gibraltar, that went on mass inoculation campaigns. Austria, one of the most vaccinated countries in the world. You know what they're doing tonight? They're locking down again.
I fully disagree with the lockdowns. I'm not.
No, I know. But the point they're locking down is because the virus is still raging. So in a weird way, the most vaccinated countries actually are doing the worst with this.
And could it be the opposite causation? Like if you're doing the worst with it, you get the vaccine more? Like that's you know, why are you assuming that it's the other way around?
Well, because Israel's COVID rates were plummeting and going down by 80%. They massively vaccinate and they go spike again. They go down, they massively vaccinate, and they do it again.
So you're saying the vaccine is causing the virus?
I'm asking a question. That's what science is doing.
I respect the fact that you're asking the question. I'm not disagreeing with
you. But doesn't it make you curious that all of a sudden we vaccinate more and then rates go up?
You need an actual hypothesis. You can't just...
But... And so I guess the question is this. I mean, and you seem like you're asking this in good faith, but... You ask the question, like, why are people so skeptical? We're skeptical because at every corner we ask questions and we submit evidence. We're suppressed, maligned. We're told that ivermectin is a horse dewormer, which is insane. We're not even allowed to talk about Regeneron or monoclonal antibodies. Not to mention a majority of COVID deaths in the United Kingdom right now are vaccinated people. So it's not even effectively working as a treatment in the United Kingdom. So I could go on and on and on. But... yeah, I mean, I think that people are starting to wake up that this thing is not what we were told it was. And not to mention, you know, the VAERS stats, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. So this is why people are skeptical, okay? According to the own government's website, there's been 818,042 adverse events. I want to remind you of something. Raise your hand if you know someone that's had an adverse event to this vaccine. Raise your hand. Look around. You want to know why people are skeptical, my friend? This is why people are skeptical. They're not making that up. They have friends that what? Maybe can't walk. Maybe their dad suddenly dropped dead. Heart attack, got COVID, and died from it. 127,641 doctor's visits, according to VAERS. 83,412 people have been hospitalized after getting the vaccine, according to VAERS. 92,017 people put in urgent care, according to VAERS. This is the government's own website, publicly available. Right? 26,199 people disabled after getting the vaccine, according to VAERS. 10,179 people had Bell's palsy, according to VAERS. 10,304 people got myocarditis, according to VAERS. And I could keep on going. 8,408 heart attacks, 2,631 miscarriages, 17,128 deaths. So excuse me while I say, it's not what it's being sold. Does that make sense?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I want to first thank you and Candace Owens because you guys gave me the motivation to change my major from criminal justice to political science. I have a little bit.
Awesome.
You'll see. Oh. I mean this in respect, but so how the heck can you come to a state like Arizona, live here, and Tucson when we had and say there's no such thing as white privilege or racism when there's been not one but two laws that have been deemed racist by a federal lawyer in the past 11 years. And here's the law. I know you go after people, man, and I got my facts.
Buckle up.
All right, cool. All righty. So in 2003, Tucson Unified School District created a program called Mexican American Studies. You know what it is?
Sounds pretty self-evident.
It's critical race theory, what you're against.
Okay.
So in 2000, it was made to close the achievement gap for Latino students, for European American students. TUSD has 75% Latino students. In 2007, we caught up. This is right around the time where Tom Horn, the state superintendent, saw this. He called these classes racist, teaching the overthrow of the government. He lied and said they were segregating these schools, segregating the students. But here's the thing. He never went to a class. And he tried three different times in 2007, 2008, 2009. And by 2010, Governor John Bruce signed the law that banned these classes. The only reason why he saw this, because he saw that Latinos were catching up. In 2017, a federal judge deemed that the law was racist and that his whole point of view was racist, and it was a 14th Amendment that was wrong for us. He deemed these classes that were racist the whole time. So I want to know, how can you come here and tell me there's no such thing as white privilege and no such thing as racism?
Easily. There's no such thing as white privilege or racism. So. There's racism, but it's not institutional. I mean, so
are you saying the judge was wrong?
I mean, your judges could be wrong all the time without specific knowledge of what you're talking about with that. But here's the most obvious way I could debunk what you're saying, which is you assume Jan Brewer signed it because she hates Latino people. Is that right?
It came out that she has. It's been proven.
Hold on a second. Whoa. What evidence do you have that Jan Brewer hates Latino people?
If you go watch the documentary about Raza Studies.
What?
It's been go watch the documentary called Raza Studies. It's about Mexican American studies.
Oh, La Raza Studies?
Raza Studies.
Okay. Well, yeah, not exactly well versed in that, but
what's wrong with that?
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Okay. Sounds interesting. But I suppose the question is, would there be another explanation for Jan Brewer doing that? Or are you going to blame
racism? She signed
racism?
Another law called SB 1070.
So what about SB 1070?
What's wrong? Do you know what SB 1070 is?
Tell me what it is.
It's basically a law for an officer to pull me over and ask for my papers. Well, I've never even been to Mexico.
Okay. Well, I think people should be asked for their papers regardless of the skin.
Okay. So there we go. Here's white privilege.
White privilege?
Okay. Here we go.
How's that white privilege?
Here we go. Who are they going to ask for their papers, me or you?
I get asked for papers all the time
when
I get pulled over. Yeah, I can show you my pile of driver's
tickets. Do you get asked to prove that you're a citizen of the United States?
Hold on a second. First of all, I get asked for my driver's license all the time when I get pulled over. In fact, every time I get pulled over, I get asked for my driver's license, okay? So, but here's the one thing. Hold on. Do you really think that you're being pulled over just because of the color of your skin?
Dude, it's happened many times.
Hey, guess what? I get pulled over too.
You're never going to know it because you don't look like me, man.
Wait, hold on.
You're never going to have to know my struggles.
This is the problem. I'm just going to give you a piece of advice. Honestly, you complimented me and Candace Owens. You're looking at the world as a victim. Okay, you're looking at the world as if there's systemic racism and the evil white man that's trying to crush you. It's a lie. It's a lie that is designed to keep you down. It's a lie that is designed to try and disempower you. And white people get pulled over all the time to be asked for their papers. And if a non-citizen does not have their papers, they should be deported from this country if they do not have their papers. So please go ahead.
All right, before you start saying I'm playing that victim thing, I'm never going to call myself a victim, but I'm not blind to the fact that my journey is going to be different than someone that doesn't look like me.
You're right. So you know how it's going to be different? It's going to be easier for you. It's because affirmative action laws benefit people of color above white applicants to certain universities. At State Street Capital Advisors, if you want to be a financial manager, you know they're not allowed to hire white people without board permission, yet they can hire Hispanic people and black people as much as they want. Do you know that United Airlines wants to double the amount of Hispanic and black pilots and try to hire less white pilots? You're right. You and I have it different. And currently, the current regime and status quo is making it easier for you. You have privilege.
I love how you turn it around after I threw facts at you. You're telling to go backwards like this, but the facts is it's there. The fact is that these laws that you say that were good,
I never said they were good.
Are they good laws? You're turning it around.
I said they very well could have been repealed for other reasons than racism. But I am saying this, that you're saying that it's a more difficult journey. I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying right now in America, you have every opportunity. In fact, it's even more than that. You have preference. As a person of color, it's easier for you to succeed than your white counterpart in this room right now. You are given a hand up. You are given discrimination in your favor right now.
That's 100% not true, bro. It's that BS that you be teaching right now.
Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate it. All right, enough. I don't know what she's saying. All right, thank you. Next question. Appreciate it. And let me just say this is the final thing. I encourage you to really think deeply and say, thanks for coming. I encourage you to ask this. Is like, you say that the journey will be different regardless of skin color. And how about this? For our Latino conservatives here, do you like when you hear stuff like this? He doesn't like, and by the way, I just encourage, and he's darker, so he's, yeah. And so, by the way, can you come up? Can you come up to the line? Go to the line, yeah. Okay. So, I just want to ask our friend, our volunteer, our Turning Point. What's your name?
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel, our journey's different. Does skin color matter?
Our journeys are not different, bro, because like you say, you know, we're one united under God. You know, I have been pulled over by cops many times. Most 99%, 0.9% of the times, these cops have treated me in the nicest ways. Cops that are probably look nothing like me. You know, every single Turning Point event that I have been to, where obviously I could tell all of my Caucasian brothers and sisters, they have treated me in the nicest of ways. It has always been always whites kind of on the left that have always mistreated me. I've gotten more mistreat from whites on the left than on the right for being a Latino conservative.
God bless you. And thank you, Dana. Thank you both. Appreciate it. We'll get to the next question. Thank you. We'll go to the next question. Thank you. Let's go, Brandon. Sorry, we got the mic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Just want to say, Charlie, it's an honor.
Happens.
Yeah. Just want to say, Charlie, it's an honor to hear you speak. I've been looking forward to this for years.
Okay.
I guess my question is specifically with racism. According to the Census Bureau from 2017, average median household income for Asian American families was $81,000. Whites was $68,000. Hispanics was $50,000. And blacks was $40,000. So if there's no set of racist actions or institutions in our country, then what is your thought of the cause of such income inequality on racial lines?
It's a really thoughtful question. Thank you. And I am a disciple and a believer in Thomas Sowell's thesis, which is that there are thousands of inputs and variables that can account for that. And it's hard to generalize. We have to be careful not to. But let me tell you three things. Number one, families. The most important thing for American society is to keep American families strong. And what you see is Asian communities versus the black community, far less likely to divorce, far more likely to have two-parent households, far more likely to have a child raised by a mother and a father, which that statistically shows you're more likely to have higher income, graduate from college, all these sorts of different factors and inputs. Thomas Sowell in Discrimination and Disparities also makes the culture argument. He says that, unfortunately, in the 1970s and 80s, this is him talking, he says that, unfortunately, in black culture, it became less appealing to want to have monogamous relationships and be married, and it, because of government intervention and many other things, it started to almost unravel what once was a very, what would be more traditional, you know, in the American family sense. The final thing I'll say is this, as far as those different outcomes and those different things, is obviously families and family creation is exceedingly important. But if you look at Asians in particular, this is just, you know, a fact, is that Asian Americans push their children and push their families to take education as a primary value almost more than any other community in America, more so than Caucasian and white communities, right? So those things all play factors. They all play roles. But here's the thing. When you deal with disparities, Thomas Sowell's favorite thesis was do not blame disparate disparities or disparities on only discrimination. First, you must exhaust every other explanation, family background, income, culture, geography. So I'll give you an easy thought exercise to prove this, right? So Billings, Montana and Pierre, South Dakota are poorer than Seattle and New York. Why? Is it because of race? Is it because of, you know, background or whatever? Or would it be best explained by, oh, Seattle and New York are port cities, so it's easier to trade with them. The cities that are by rivers and by oceans are always richer than cities that are landlocked or in mountains. That has nothing to do with race. The point is that sometimes you can explain something away as simply as saying there's other factors that play into that than just the simple, sloppy, and overly generalized kind of racial component to that. Really quick follow-up if you're interested.
I guess my point was I wasn't saying that it was entirely, in any point, racism, but do you think it plays any role?
I mean, it depends on, I mean, that's why I think it's been, I think it plays a role. I think, again, I'll say this. The only systemic racism that I can find on the books right now is the fact that white people are being actively discriminated against from applying to college and applying for jobs and getting medical treatment in certain parts of this country. If there is a role, it's so, it's indecipherable, it's immeasurable, but what is measurable is family creation, monogamous relationships, and values, which matter a lot. And values, fathers in the home, and also just kind of this general idea of church attendance declining in certain communities and that playing a role. So if there was even an active role in it, I don't even think you'd be able to measure it scientifically. So I'd say no. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, Charlie, I just want to say thank you for coming out. I've been a big fan for the past 2 years over all of this craziness, and I've been listening to your podcast. I just want to say thank you for your authenticity and your consistency through everything. But my question is around election integrity. And so obviously there have been so many questions. I found myself extremely frustrated in November of last year and seeing no action from the right. And so what do you think are the best like first steps to having safe and secure elections that all Americans can count on, left and right? And how can we as college students, and I guess everyone in the conservative movement, best help that fight?
It's a great question. I know Arizona likes mail-in balloting for whatever reason. We got to ban mail-in balloting. No more of that. No more, no excuse mail-in balloting. It's like number one. You should have to go somewhere to go vote. Maybe you could make some excuses for the terminally ill or the paralyzed, but very, very small, you know, excuses in that sense. We need harsher and not harsher, but a stricter, I guess you should. Yeah, harsh, I guess you say. Signature verification. That this kind of idea that you're roughly in kind of the arena of it, that no way. Is that should not be tolerated or counted. We need to purge our voter rolls of dead people, transient voters, people that have moved out of state. We need to know who's on the voter rolls and who's actually voting. And then finally, we should have voter ID. Is that it should the fact that it takes voter ID, an ID to board an airplane and rent a movie, and that it doesn't take an ID to actually go vote, I think is ridiculous, and I think we need to push back against it. So those are some good places to start. But we have to never lose focus on the fact that if we do not fix our elections, that is the issue that kind of trumps or is over almost every single issue and is incredibly important. Thank you for being here tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Kirk. It's great to see you here. Speaking of mail-in ballots, I would support mail-in voting only if they allowed us to do mail-in vaccines as well, so I can sign my own vaccine card. So anyways, my question is, you probably heard about vaccine passport ideology. Yes. And so on and so forth, you know, where you can't go to the beach without a vaccine, where you can't, you know, what needs to fall in place for that to happen here in Tucson, and how would you prevent it?
Say, how do I prevent it? Yeah, good. The way you said it, put into place. Well, look, we need mass non-compliance. The fact is that if you're a business owner that might come under this vaccine passport thing, do not follow it. Don't enforce it. Don't force it on your employees. I mean, you know, this is what we're doing at Turning Point USA, is that OSHA, the Occupational Safety Hazard Associate, whatever organization, they're coming in there saying, we at Turning Point USA must vaccinate all our employees, 100 plus employees. I'm like, yeah, right. Good luck. Right? That's not going to happen. And by the way, let me just say this. As an employer, we employ 185 people at Turning Point USA, even more if you count part-time people. Who am I as the boss to go sit down with my employees and ask their intimate medical details and history? Like, where do I get the right to do that? And so the first thing is we need mass non-compliance, and then you need to take back your city council here in Tucson, and you need to make sure that never happens and that never actually gets put into effect. So thank you. I appreciate it. We got a line, I'm sorry. So.
And by costing money on any claim, you show them that they're getting sued because of violating the ADA, that's how you win the
That's smart. I think that's true, that they are violating the ADA in some of these cases. Two more questions. Yes.
Hello. Earlier this evening, you mentioned that more laws equals less freedom. And then later, you quoted Harvard by mentioning that operating within the boundaries of laws
yes.
creates freedom. Where do you feel that the line is drawn for that?
So just say that again. So it's kind of the similar quote. You're saying, so the more secular, the less free. Just repeat that. Sorry, I was a little distracted. So.
Correct. It was the quote from Harvard
yes.
earlier that you mentioned that it's just important to operate under law, which can provide freedom for people.
Yeah. So law, in my opinion, needs to pursue virtue. I'll give you a great example, right? Here's just like an easy one. Drag queen story hour should be outlawed in America. Children should not legally be allowed to go to these, to people that in public libraries that wear dresses and prey on young children, right? That shouldn't be allowed, right? I'll give you another example. It should be illegal to have pornographic sexual education curriculum for children in high school and below. It should be illegal, right? And so that's an idea of the law trying to point towards virtue, right? And this is part of what it means to live in a constitutional republic. We're going to have to debate it. We're going to have to talk about it, right? Sometimes you have to be willing to say that should not be allowed, but that actually makes people freer. I know that's like something that sometimes more strict libertarians say, how dare you say that? Well, it's true though, right? And I'll give you an example, which is, you know, in some of these movements where they decriminalize certain measures, it doesn't actually make people happier or doesn't make the community better. I'll give you one example. It's not exactly popular with young people. I don't care. Which is the legalization of marijuana. I'm totally against it, right? I think it's a false flag. I think it's ridiculous. And I think that marijuana is really bad if you don't do it. And I get hatred from both sides on this. Don't care. The point is that as states have legalized weed, the states have become more dangerous. More children are doing it. They become more suicidal. So the question is, do we actually want to move in? Is that us actually becoming more free, or this kind of false freedom that actually is a gateway drug, which it is, to something that actually isn't? So I hope that's somewhat helpful, but these are some things that I think we should try to draw the line on. So thank you. This will be the final question. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am getting married 1 week from
Congratulations.
Today. Congratulations. Here in Tucson. 1 week from today here in Tucson, and obviously I admire you and Erica. I both heard you speak at YWLS. It was amazing. You guys have a beautiful marriage, and so keeping that in mind that we want to have a Christian conservative marriage and raise Christian conservative babies, what could be the best advice that you would give to a newly married couple, keeping those specific points in mind?
So honor the Sabbath. I turn my phone off for 24 hours every week. Put it in a drawer, and I focus on things that aren't in the cyber world. It's been a beautiful gift. All of you will realize that the Ten Commandments are there to bless you, not to make your life worse. You honor the Sabbath. It's the greatest gift. I encourage every young person, especially young couples. You turn your phone off. You journal. You read books. You focus on each other, right? Even if you're traveling, all of a sudden, there's no interruptions. There's no Instagram. There's no tweets and all that. That's my other advice for young couples. Delete all social media. I mean that. Delete it. It will keep you focused on each other, and I'm kind of generally anti-social media for young people as it is, but not exactly a popular position. But I think you all know that it's making you deeply unhappy, and comparing yourself to things that are unrealistic, and you're being controlled by people who hate you. Besides that, it's wonderful. By the way, follow me on Instagram later. No, I'm kidding. So that's the other thing. And the final thing is this, which I mean, I've only been married 6 months. My wife's amazing. Which is, you just got to put in work. You got to put in the effort, right? It just doesn't happen. You have to carve out time. You have to prioritize it, right? You have to be patient. And you have to make it important. You're going to have to say, I'm not going to that event. I'm not going to hang out with that person. Instead, my marriage comes first, right? And then also the final thing is, people say like, oh, happy wife, happy life. Better it's happy spouse, happy house, right? Which is both sides need to be happy. And I will, you actually remind me of something. Everyone here, this is where I really make a lot of friends, which is reject hookup culture and save yourself for marriage and go find your one for marriage, please. Again, no one, I rarely ever get applause for that. But it's true is that you'll be a happier, freer person. If you make a different decision, then whatever, that's fine. I'm not here to, you know, moralize. I'm just giving you advice. That's all. And I mean that. You make whatever decision you want. So, but it's a beautiful thing. It's how God wants you to live. And the final thing I'll say is put God first, though. You put God even above your husband. And then I think all of a sudden some of those verses that you have, you know, probably kind of been exposed to, you know, submit to your husband and all that. Well, all of a sudden, oh, wow, now I understand how that the real hierarchy of all that is really fits in with God being kind of the head of the marriage. And then, yeah, get really good pastoral advice ahead of your marriage. That's the other thing is every young couple needs to go through intensive, exhaustive premarital counseling. I highly recommend it. It's very, very important. But you're going to do great. And so congratulations. That's really great. So, all right, in closing, everybody. Oh, yeah, and have lots of children once you're married. That's right. We as conservative Christians need to have lots of kids. I want to thank you guys again. This was a phenomenal event. Our best days are ahead, everybody. America's a gift. It's a gift from the Lord. We have to keep on fighting for it. We have to keep on contesting for it. Be the same person in public that you are in private. Be courageous. Be strong. Focus on the good. Focus on things that are meaningful and that are wonderful. I want to thank those that listen to our podcast. Anyone out there, thank you for that. We deeply appreciate that. And support Turning Point USA. America Fest, December 18, 19, 20, 21. We have Tucker Carlson, Kayleigh McEnany, Donald Trump Jr., Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Jesse Waters, all coming to the Phoenix Convention Center, December 18, 19, 20, 21. So check it out. Get your tickets. We're running out of tickets very quickly, everybody. TPUSA.com for all of you watching on the stream, you guys here. Get your tickets to America Fest. It's going to be unbelievable. I want to thank you guys. You guys have been amazing. God bless you guys and God bless America. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.